you know, somebody said, you know, we don't need to spiritually isolate. And in fact, even social distancing is maybe a bit of a misnomer. It's physical distancing that we need to do, right? It's physical distancing, and that's really important for the common good and for the good of everybody. But we need to be in solidarity with one another socially and spiritually, and we need to actually increase the way that we reach out and connect with one another.
You're listening to Upside Down Podcast,
an ecumenical conversation
at the intersection of justice, spirituality, and culture.
We've created this space with you in mind.
So join us for unscripted conversations on God's Upside Down Kingdom. Welcome to Upside Down Podcast. I am Kayla Craig. I am one of the founders and co-hosts of Upside Down Podcast. I'm really excited for the conversation we are going to have today. I am joined by co-host Gina Silberto. Gina, say hi.
Hello.
And we are both very excited for the guest that we have with us today, Reverend Anna Wolfenden. Anna, did I say your name correctly? Please tell me it wasn't so off.
It was perfect. It's just perfect.
Well, before we begin, we just want to give a big thank you to everyone who makes this podcast possible. If you've been listening recently, you've heard that this podcast is completely free of ads, and it's completely free for everyone to listen to. So thank you so much to our patrons who make that possible. We literally couldn't do it without you. And if you're listening and you would like to throw a couple bucks our way to keep this thing going, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/upsidedownpodcast, or just go to upsidedownpodcast.com and click the giving link, and you can follow the directions there. Okay, so Reverend Anna, we are just thrilled to have you with us today, especially in the time that we are finding ourselves in a time of a pandemic. We are all trying to figure out, what do we do? What is church? How do we come together as a body when we actually can't always physically come together? So I'm so thrilled to have you on. One of the things we do on Upside Down Podcast, before we just give a official biography read, is to let our guests who are on actually introduce themselves. So we were wondering if you could share a little bit about who you are, what you do. As our co-host Lindsay Wallace always asks, what keeps you up at night for our listeners?
Wonderful. Well, I'm so grateful to be on the pod today. And I've been binging on your show the last week or so, and really appreciating the different conversations and bouncing around and listening to some of my favorite speakers. I just totally love that you had Father Greg on your show. That was just amazing to listen to. So I'm really glad to be here. I am a pastor, and I founded a church in Los Angeles called the Garden Church, which is what my book, This Is God's Table, is about. And I have been driven by this question of, what does it mean to be church? What does it mean to be faithful in this generation? And I would say different iterations of that do actually keep me up at night. Just thinking about what it means to be spiritual community. And I think that, I think we all know that this is shifting and changing over time. And when many people are understandably maybe saying, you know, church is not for me, I am really interested in asking why, and then making changes based on our context and what the needs are of this generation to continue to be able to love God and love neighbor together. So, so I founded the Garden Church in Los Angeles. And then since then, I've passed it on to its next pastors, who are doing an amazing job continuing to pastor that community. And I now live in Western Massachusetts. I'm the Protestant chaplain at Amherst College, and doing some consulting and writing and speaking and all sorts of different adventures.
Yeah. Well, we're so thrilled to have you with us. I know you're thinking about a lot of the same things that so many of us in this community are mulling over and thinking about, and you bring a lot of wisdom to the table. So I want to ask you, how, just kind of to get us started, just, it's not a big question or anything, but how would you define church, especially in kind of our Western context?
Yeah, that's a, I mean, that is a big question. I feel like there's like hours of conversation about that question. But my most basic definition is people coming together to love God and love neighbor. I also think it has something to do with sacraments. I think it has something to do with tradition. And by that, I don't necessarily mean doing things the exact same way that we've always done it, but what is the spiritual lineage and heritage that gets passed down from generation to generation? And I think I will kind of leave it at that. I think church is not just a building. I think that's kind of obvious. I think that it's not just Sunday morning worship, though I do think that worship gatherings are an important piece. You know, often we say like, well, church is the people, it's not the building. And I believe in that. I also think it is more than just people getting together, that there is something about intentionally loving God and loving neighbor and having various practices that we do together to embody that.
I love that. As you're talking, I'm so curious because you mentioned lineage, and I'm Catholic. I work for a group of Catholic sisters, and something that I encounter pretty much every day at work is people who have been hurt or traumatized or disappointed. Like, there's just such a range of emotions by the institutional church. And I think there's a real hunger for worship and community, but there's also a desire to like denounce the parts of the institutional church, at least the Catholic one, that are abusive and harmful. How do you reconcile lineage with that timeless need for connection?
Yeah. I mean, that's a question that keeps me up at night. I think that being someone, I mean, so I still identify with the institutional church, and I say that in, you know, in a big way. I still think there's a place for, I don't know, I'm on the fence some days about what the place is of our institutions, but I think there is certainly a place for that continuation of tradition and of heritage, and I'm grateful for many things about our institutions. I don't think most of us, I don't think, would be in church settings or have had access to them if it wasn't for some kind of institution. And we all know that such harm has happened, and that's not just in the Catholic Church, right? That's across the board. And I think for those of us who are still, for be it clergy, lay people, you know, congregations, that we need to wrestle seriously with the harms that have been and continue to be done. And there are many, they're manifold, right? There are many of them. And I think that there is a constant invitation to repent and be changed. That call of Jesus is to repent, to turn, to be made new, and that is not just an individual call, but also a collective one. And I hope that for those that feel called to try church in these various ways, that it's not about saying, oh, the institutional church, they are all bad and they have it all wrong, and I'm going to go do a new thing and it's going to be great, which there's certainly a temptation to do. I get tempted to that. But I don't think that's faithful. I think what's truly faithful is to say, how can the work that I'm doing in creating these spaces that don't look like what we maybe think church has been, how can that be part of both collective repentance and making change? And also that the work that we do in these non-traditional church settings actually filters back into the more traditional church setting, so that we're all renewed by that work and that we can be changed together. And I'm a big fan of that we are, and I know this is an ecumenical podcast. I am an ecumenical kind of clergy, and in that I think we're all one big church. Reverend Laura Everett she's often quoted talking about how, you know, she's part of the UCC, but that we're all responsible to one another. And it's easy to want to distance myself and be like, well, I am a progressive Christian, and so I don't have to worry about whatever group is doing something or something that is harmful. It's like, well, no, we're all, there's things that we're all responsible for, and we're all one big body. So if there's unhealth in one part of the body, it affects us. And if there's healing and renewal that's happening in another part of the body, I hope that that can spread as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful picture. So I was thinking about your book, This Is God's Table, Finding Church Beyond the Walls. And I was wondering if you could share with us kind of a story of your heart, a story that comes to mind that really showed you that Jesus, that the Holy Spirit is with us in the pew and in the garden. Was there one thing that just kind of summarizes just kind of what you've been learning and processing and growing in your own heart?
Mm. Well, not one, but many. You know, starting a church from scratch, it's hard work. I mean, being church is generally hard work, but there were days where I had to drag myself down, especially in the early days when I never knew, was it going to be me and my sister who was leading music and our farmer and no one else, or what, you know, what was going to happen. But I always, you know, we should never say always and never, but like, I always found that the Holy Spirit was at work in that place when we were willing to show up. And that even if there are just a few of us, that something miraculous and beautiful would happen. I think one of the times that always happened, or that I was maybe more attuned to it, was during communion. So we were an outdoor church. We were in an empty lot in Los Angeles that we turned into an urban farm and an outdoor sanctuary. And we met for our weekly gathering on Sunday afternoon. And we'd work together for an hour in the garden and art projects and various ways to work side by side. And then we'd worship together. And then we would move straight from communion into a big community meal. And the community meal was as much as we could. It was sourced from the food that we'd grown, and people were able to have contributed to the meal, whether they had kitchens to cook in or not, because we were all growing the food together. But at the communion time, the worship space was centered around this big cedar stump, which we consecrated as God's table, where all were welcome to feed and be fed. And so the worship space was circular, and we would take communion, take the bread and the cup, two people. So it'd go along, and this amazing opportunity to look people in the eye and say, you know, beloved child of God, this is the bread of life given for you. And usually the people that were right around in the chairs, kind of right around close, were maybe the people maybe a little bit more involved or had been before. But then I would work my way out, and I'd go out around the next line of chairs. And then I'd find people who were kind of hanging out by the front gate or sitting over in the prayer garden or sitting back on the picnic table. And inevitably there were these human connections with people who maybe spent most of their week maybe on the side of the sidewalk asking for money, maybe in lines for food, getting not kind looks, having people walk further away from them. And to be able to like walk right up to one of my neighbors and look them in the eye and say, beloved child of God, this is the body of Christ. This is the bread of life given for you. Never ceased to touch me and change me and humble me of what an incredible honor and privilege it is to be able to be human together and to be able to have this sacramental moment where the fact that we are all created in God's image was just so present and so, so palpable. And that would ground me each week. And that would keep me going to like, you know, we've got to keep showing up and seeing each other and feeding each other, because this is how we are being changed.
Yeah. I love that. I love thinking about that tree stump too, which I know is on the cover of your book. And obviously it's as I was listening, I could just like picture it, you know? So something that is on everybody's mind right now, really globally, is this time of pandemic that we find ourselves in with COVID-19, with this novel coronavirus. And I'm wondering, as a pastor, what can we do to cultivate community, even if that means we are, you know, kind of doing the social distancing or even quarantine? Where do we even begin?
Yeah. You know, it's been quite a week, and I know by the time this airs, it will have been a little over a week, and and we don't, you know, I think it feels like things are changing so quickly day by day. But I've spent a lot of my time this week, first being present with college students whose whole lives are being turned upside down, and a lot of feelings about that, and faculty and staff. And one of the things that has become really clear to me, and in my own experience, is that one of the things we can do for one another, and we can certainly do this at a distance, we can do it on the phone or on Marco Polo or FaceTime or whatever it is to be creating spaces to really listen to one another, and to create spaces where we can feel our feelings and be present to, maybe it's fear, maybe it's disappointment. I'm supposed to be launching a book right now, and that's a really weird thing to do during a pandemic. And I'm really struggling with, who am I to feel disappointed about, like, that some of my events are getting canceled? And yet it was really helpful for me to have the space to just voice that disappointment to a safe person. And then I can move on to being present to people whose lives are being seriously disrupted. So I think creating spaces to feel feelings is important. And then I just think this is a really, I mean, it's these unprecedented times. And sometimes that is an opportunity for creativity and for us to actually take something to the next level. So I've really been advocating for increasing church this week. Like, how can we actually increase being the church while we cease being together in person?
Mm.
You know, somebody said, you know, we don't need to spiritually isolate. And in fact, even social distancing is maybe a bit of a misnomer. It's physical distancing that we need to do, right?
Right.
It's physical distancing. And that's really important for the common good and for the good of everybody. But we need to be in solidarity with one another socially and spiritually. And we need to actually increase the way that we reach out and connect with one another. And I'm seeing so many creative ideas popping up all over the internet, from people writing letters to each other, like on paper, to
remember that.
Yeah, right. you know, a lot of people gathering on Zoom or on other platforms. I wish I had, like, bought Zoom stock, you know, last week. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
But I think that whatever the virtual means are, but also old-fashioned phone calls. I just was talking to a pastor who's part a pastor of a large church, and there are, I think, five of them that are, you know, on pastoral staff, and they divided their 1,000-person congregation into five, and they are each going to call every single parishioner in the next week to check in. And it's like, that's amazing. Like, when do we make that kind of, like, attention to everybody for pastoral care? And I think that during a time like this, I don't know, I need more spiritual practice. I need more, like, spiritual and emotional connection. And to spiritually and socially isolate, I think will only increase the anxiety. But if we can physically distance, but really take an extra added effort to connect with our churches, with our neighbors. I just saw Gareth Higgins posted or sent out a great idea of a friend of his had typed up a letter to six neighbors that said something like, sorry, it took a health scare to introduce myself, but if anyone gets sick, here's my number. I can leave groceries on your doorstep, like text if you need anything. And I was like things like that, like, oh, right, we are actually all connected. And sometimes it takes the snowstorm or maybe the pandemic for us to get outside of our own little worlds to the point where we can be community together and support one another in different ways. I've been going on for a while. One of you should stop me. And
no, I think that's exactly right. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think there is such a desire to both reach out and be reached out to. I know I'm seeing lots of social media posts about people really struggling with mental health right now. People who, frankly, I was even like surprised to see this posted by because I know them and like didn't realize that they were struggling in this way. But people saying like, I'm having a hard time even articulating how I'm feeling right now. And so I do think there's a desire to form connection. And I think the question is just like, well, what do we do? And so I love those specific, like write a letter, you know, write notes to your neighbors. I love that. I love too that your book is called Finding Church Beyond the Walls, because this is a time when we can't be in the walls together. I guess as I'm hearing you talk about this, I'm wondering, were there things that you learned from starting that specific church, which it sounds like literally did not have walls, that we can carry over to this time specifically when like, yeah, we are physically distanced or isolated?
Yeah. So this is something I've been thinking a lot about. It's interesting. The first part of the week, I just was, I don't know, full on in college life response. And then suddenly on Wednesday, I was like, oh, I have these other hats. And what does this conversation about finding church beyond the walls have to offer? So I just feel like I'm just kind of beginning my reflections. So these are very like brainstormy and raw. Yeah. Which I guess is all of us right now.
Yeah, and that's how we do things here.
Great. Excellent. In the liturgy from the Garden Church, when we moved into our prayer time, we would always say, O Holy One, living into your vision of more heaven here on earth and naming our place in your interconnected web of life, we name our prayers to you. And there's something about that interconnected web of life that's really feels very present to me right now. And I think it's so easy, especially for those of us who maybe have more like privilege and financial security. It's just easy for us to pretend that we are not interconnected and pretend we're not fragile. And one of the things that I love about working with food is it immediately, when we start to pull the thread on food, we get into issues of justice and of who has it, who doesn't have it, who is picking it, and what are their living conditions and their wages, and where is it being shipped from around the world, and what kind of impact does that have? And so I think that a time like this is an opportunity for us as people of faith to really name our place in that interconnected web of life, and that there's something about naming our place in it that then means that we are able to, I hope, work for a more just and generous world for others who are connected in this web. So I think one of the things that we can do in this time is we can take on practices of praying for the whole interconnected web and praying with our hearts and our words, praying with our actions. One of the things that keeps coming to mind for me is all of our small business owners in town, and this is probably true in many of your towns, and there's a particular restaurant that I know is just, they're awesome and we love going there, and they're just this little, wonderful little local food place. And I noticed that we were like, oh yeah, we're not going to go out for date night this week and we're going to stay in and cook. And so I just sent them a little email and said, could I buy a gift certificate tonight? Like, I'm not going to use it right now, but like, what are those ways that we can think about our interconnection and then act on it and continue to pray? I mean, I think there's power in prayer.
Anna, I was going to say, as I was reading some of your reflections, you know, you said like, it's actually really thoughtful to think about our most vulnerable and even like make the decision to cancel things and not put the onus on the most vulnerable, like for them, like, okay, well, if you're sick, don't come. Or if you're vulnerable to getting sick, don't come. But I thought that was a really thoughtful and tangible thing. And for us, I live in Iowa, Midwest. Everyone looks forward to spring break. And I've been seeing people just in general parent groups, and times are changing so fast, but people were still saying as of yesterday morning that they were planning on going to Disney World. Now, as of time of recording today, Disney World has closed, but it just blew my mind. And I get like that that's super fun. And you maybe you've been planning for a really long time and you didn't want to disappoint your kids. But to me, it just broke my heart that people would choose something that they get to do. And in that, just completely forget an entire population of people, of young children who are prone to pneumonia, like my daughter, who's immunocompromised, or older people, or, you know, people that don't get to have the privilege of deciding if they're going to work from home or not. And just, I just was blown away by the lack of care or thoughtfulness in some of these decisions that people were kind of putting their feet on the ground for. And I think this is an opportunity for the church to be the church, you know, the universal church, like you were saying at the beginning of this. And so I just really appreciate all the people. You know, like my personality, it's easy to get really frustrated and in the injustice I do see. But I'm also really encouraged by the pastors and the lay leaders and the just ordinary moms and dads and teachers and business owners who are making really, really thoughtful decisions that go way beyond themselves. And I kind of have this belief that when one person is okay, then it makes everybody okay. You know what I mean? Like when one person rises, we all rise. And I think we're all part of a body. And gosh, I appreciate the people that have been really thoughtful because it means a lot.
I think that I'm just right there with you. And if we're all wrong and it afterwards and we really just overreacted, then I think that I'll be fine to be wrong. But it seems like so clear to me, at least, that and from all the reading and the sort of advice, that if we can really take the most vulnerable in mind and make our choices based on that, that is how we show love right now. So that the way that we can love our neighbor is to be sure that we aren't unknowingly infecting them with something that might not be a big deal for my body, but could be a really big deal for others' bodies. And it's interesting. I'm trying to help just hold, like, disappointment is real and no one likes to be disappointed. And I think it's kind of it's just an interesting place. And I think the church has a place in it to be able to say, yes, we are all disappointed. Yes, this is not ideal. This is not there's no good solution to this. So how do we act with the best of our knowledge for the care of the most people and for the most vulnerable people? And that it's not forever. Like, I fully believe we're going to be back in our sanctuaries again. People will get to reschedule their trips to Disney World. It's not forever, but if many of us can have some discomfort and be inconvenienced, then that's literally, it's life or death for some people. And I don't think we can, I don't know, I can't gloss over that at this point.
So something you had mentioned is a way that we can continue to be the church is kind of increase our own spiritual practices. And I'm wondering, and Gina, chime in here too, if there are certain prayers or resources that you have found comforting kind of in a time where a lot of us are feeling anxious, like you said, Gina, a little worried or on edge.
Yeah, that's a great question. I really love the Book of Common Prayer and saying those well-worn prayers or whatever that is, praying the Psalms, the prayers that I don't have to come up with myself in a time where I feel spiritually a little shaken and a little like to say, these are prayers that are well-worn prayers. They have been prayed in hard times before. They will be prayed in hard times in the future. I'm going to keep praying them. The Psalms are similarly just, they pray us. You know, we can pray in with them. I also, I mean, I've been doing this for 36 hours, so, but I'm going to try to keep it up because I'm going to try to really get outside every day. I know that's not possible for everyone in some like urban settings, but if possible, even to open a window, get some sunshine or some rain or whatever it is. And, you know, physically isolating does not mean we can't be outdoors. And I have found that just to go for a quick walk, be with in nature has really helped me to get through this week. And I want to kind of, again, up that practice. You know, for those of you who can get out in gardens or plant something, it's supposed to be 29 degrees here in a couple of days. So I'm not going to plant things because that would be sad. But just doing things with, you know, putting our hands in the dirt or being outdoors. And that's something that really from my time at the Garden Church continues to be feel really true is that as we reconnect with nature, we are also reconnecting with God and with the source of things and that like that God is present in the natural world in a way that we can pray by being out in nature as well. And then I think there are a lot of different churches are putting out various ways to connect and do spiritual practice together. So I'll be really curious to see how we pray together during this time, but that not isolating. You know, another thing I think that is when we think about those who are vulnerable is, as was mentioned a minute ago, is that people who maybe are struggling with isolation anyway or with mental illness, anxiety, this is really extra hard. And so to be, I think as a spiritual practice is to reach out, make phone calls, send texts, and be on a higher alert of how we can care for one another's emotional and spiritual needs. And that is actually one of the practices. Another thing I just started doing today, so I can only tell you that it's working so far today, is I set my timer and I said I can only check social media and the news every 2 hours. And that has honestly helped. Again, I've only done it for a day, but I got a lot more done today when I was trying to get work done. But also I just noticed that I want to stay in touch and I want to be up on things, but it also ratchets up my anxiety. So for whatever that would mean for each person, but giving some Sabbath, some distance from the news and from social media or however you get your information from the outside world, I think was probably going to be a really important practice for us. Maybe not for days and days if we need to stay connected, but for stretches of time where we focus on other things.
And I mean, the reality is we are in the season of Lent and we still will be when this comes out. And it's a time that regardless of, you know, the pandemic or whatever is going on in our lives calls us to fasting in various ways. And so that fits so perfectly with fasting. Again, maybe not fasting from social media for until Easter, but being intentional about taking those fasts and turning off our phone. And I've been writing reflections for all of Lent that I'm trying to keep for an audience that could be religious or not. And like, no matter what you subscribe to, fasting from social media is just like a healthy thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a really good word, Gina, just this reminder of how we're in Lent and how, you know, this goes back, Anna, to what you were saying, like these worn prayers that have gotten us through and this journey that we observe as, you know, we make our way to the cross. That's a really good reminder. And something that has been helping me is I feel like when I try to pray in hard times, I have no words. And then I feel even more dejected. Like, well, if I don't have the words, then God must not even be with me. So something that I have found really helpful for me is to read the prayers of others. And this is a practice that I've really been incorporating more into my life. I don't go to a highly liturgical church. There's bits of it. So for me, just really seeking that out, and whether they're more modern liturgies or more rooted in like doing breath prayers with the Psalms, mm-hmm. I have found that to be very comforting, and I feel like I hear God in new ways as I'm praying those, and I've been, starting to write some for other people who happen to be parents, because I feel like a lot of times in scary situations or in times of higher anxieties, I'm especially fearful for my kids. And so that has just been a helpful practice for me spiritually. And I also love what you said about trying to get outside, if that's something that you have access to. As I'm recording this, I have kids home from school playing outside, and just that physicality with our bodies can somehow too be a spiritual practice of taking care of our bodies in ways that we can, that are honoring to everyone.
Yeah. Well, and I think everyone's, in different situations, but it's possible that some of who are listening to this podcast have some more time at home, and maybe it means a little bit more free time or a little bit more family time, and thinking of the Sabbath invitations, what are the things that are life-giving and that recharge us? And, is it cooking or doing a puzzle or playing games or, doing something creative or artistic? Those things that are life-giving and that, we don't always make time for. And I think that those types of life-giving, restful practices will help us to be grounded and be able to be present through this hard time. I also, this is kind of jumping back a bit, but one of the things that is forever present with me in a different way after pastoring the Garden Church is just the vulnerability of those of our neighbors who are living outdoors or who are food insecure. And that has been one of the things that's been really keeping me up at night this last week, is how we can best care for communities that are already vulnerable. We talked about within our churches, elderly or those who have compromised immune systems. But those who are living outdoors don't have access to, people say like self-isolate, stay home. Well, if you don't have a home, what does that mean? Shelters are not always equipped. A lot of people who are food insecure get their food from religious organizations. And how do we deal with this necessary self, isolation so that we don't spread while also continuing to care for? And I don't have answers to this question, but it's something that I hope that all of your listeners and that all of us as people of faith don't forget that those populations in this time where there is a lot of hunkering down and staying home, and that whether it's, donating or figuring out how to support a church to support giving, prepackaged non-perishable food, whatever it is in each community, that we remember that there's an even higher level of fear and vulnerability within the unhoused communities.
I'm so glad that you shared that. And it's definitely, I work for Preemptive Love, which is a peacemaking and empowerment organization. And I've been thinking about our refugee friends from places like Syria and Iraq, and how they can be especially vulnerable with something like this. And there's so much need. And I think that a lot of us who come from places of privilege forget that until we find our own material lack, or we find things that we can't control, even with amazing insurance or healthcare. There are things that are outside of our control. And I just pray that we could use this time to be strengthened in our compassion for others who face similar fears every day and are even more vulnerable. So I'm really glad that you reminded us of that.
Yeah, I also would offer an invitation, and Kayla, if this is not okay, please edit it out. But I'm feeling, so I live alone. I live in the Bronx, and I have been somewhat aware of food justice for a few years now. And so I've tried to be really intentional about how and where I source my food. And what that has looked like for me is belonging to a CSA in my neighborhood. And that because I live alone, the deliveries are actually often like more than I can eat. And so I have this like totally bulging freezer of, and my CSA is also really robust. So I have this bulging freezer of like meat and dairy and tons and tons and tons of vegetables. And I would love to help and also feel like I don't know how to. I am in the Bronx, and so I'm hesitant to just like put up flyers in my building or something. And I, yeah, maybe that's a lot larger conversation about like where should my line of fear be and is that appropriate? But I don't know if you or listeners have like concrete ways of people who are feeling abundance at this time, as I am. I do feel like super blessed with abundance. And I also at the same time am like, I have no idea what to do with this or how to even help.
I feel like that's such a great invitation and question, Gina. And I don't have an answer, but I wonder, yeah. I understand too, the line of like not wanting to just put up flyers.
alone. I don't know that it's appropriate to be like, here I am. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, I don't know. Could a neighbor email you and you'd meet them in the lobby or.
Right.
I don't. Yeah. Or do you put it out on your social media and maybe there are people in the Bronx that know somebody? I'm always interested in how we are actually a lot more connected than we realize. And I think just your willingness to put it out there, whether you say it to two of your neighbors in the elevator or whether you put it on social media, if that's a way that you connect, or you send out an email to a few local friends, that there is like there, those networks are actually there, and they appear a little bit more when we have some kind of, you know, collective tragedy or trauma or
right.
I don't even know what we call a pandemic at this point. There's a great, I think it's national, but it's called the Buy Nothing Group, which is like a Facebook group network. And I wonder about like, I mean, that's the kind of thing I would put on my Buy Nothing group here and say, I have a bunch of food in my freezer, right? And if you want some of it, I can leave it on my front porch. Or, I guess my encouragement would be to not be afraid to put it out there in ways that feel safe to you, but to offer what you have, because I think that somebody else, you are the, there is enough for somebody else.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you're thinking of that, Gina. And hopefully this is a conversation that we continue to have and question we continue to ask, and we can have it. We have a listener Facebook group, which is called Upside Down Together, and you can search for us. And this is like just exactly the type of thing that we can be like brainstorming and bouncing off each other and just kind of using that holy creativity to foster community and connection in exactly where we are as we try to love our neighbor well, even in a unknown and turbulent time. So Reverend Anna, thank you so much for joining us. If our listeners want to connect more with you, where can they find your book? Where can they find you online?
Sure. So my book is This is God's Table, Finding Church Beyond the Walls. And you can find it at your local bookstore. You can order it from Bookshop or you can order it from Amazon. And you can find me online at Anna Woofenden. That's AnnaWoofenden.com. On Facebook, it's Rev Anna Woof. On Instagram, it's also Rev Anna Woof. And on Twitter, at Anna Woof. And I also have a podcast as well called the Food and Faith Podcast. And listeners can find me there as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This is just, you know, kind of this unofficial theme of the episode or of this season of Upside Down Podcast has been get your people. And I can't think of a more timely topic in that in that frame. So thank you so much. And for our listeners, we just want to tell you that we love you. We're thinking of you. Please take care of yourselves. Be gentle with yourselves. Reach out to us if you need somebody to talk to. We are Upside Down Podcast on Instagram, which is where we post our show notes so you can learn more about this. And we will also tag Reverend Anna. And like I said before, you're always welcome to join the Upside Down Together listener group on Facebook to process through these things that we're talking about through the lens of Upside Down Kingdom. So thank you so much for listening, ladies. Thank you so much for making time and chaotic schedules to talk. And for everyone listening, we will see you next time.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Upside Down Podcast. New episodes are released on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month. The Upside Down Podcast is created by Lindsay Wallace, Kayla Craig, Elisa Molina, and Gina Siliberto. Our show notes are written by Lana Smith. Johnny Craig and Tess Malone edit the episodes, and our theme music is Dreamer's Act by DJ Sean P. And of course, our monthly patrons make everything possible.